This is the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, Richard James Rogers, high school science and chemistry teacher and author of the award-winning book, The Quick Guide to Classroom Management. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to today's episode on the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, as always, Richard James Rogers. And I thought after the juicy, tangy, slightly controversial podcast episode last time on the story of Mr. Huggins, I would maybe tone it down a little bit for this one, and talk about something a little bit more mainstream and delve into the topic of helping students who have English as an additional language. Now, I've been teaching internationally for just over 14 years now, about 15 years, and I did a two-year stint in the UK before coming over to Thailand to teach internationally. So 17 years in total, and in that time I must have taught thousands and thousands of students who spoke a mother tongue, a native language that was different to English, with varying degrees of competency in both their native language and in English. And what I'm going to describe today are some techniques and strategies I have gathered and utilized and built up and practiced over the years, which any teacher can apply and utilize in their lessons. What this is not going to be is a scientific pedagogical analysis of ELD or EAL techniques, but it will be an experience-based description of what I've used during my time as a teacher that works in the classroom. So the first thing that is always really helpful with ELD or EAL learners is to speak more slowly and also to speak more classically. One of the first things I quickly had to do when I came to Thailand was to modify my accent. I come from North Wales in a small town called Flint, and typically the accent there is more Liverpudlian, Liverpool style than traditional Welsh style. And if I were to speak in my local colloquial way with the students here, many of them would not be able to understand me. So I had to speak more slowly and speak more clearly. And any teacher can do that. It's just a case of monitoring yourself, also repeating words as well as you speak them. So for example, this is called a conical flask. Everybody say conical flask. And you get the students to repeat that. Those who've been following my podcast for a while will know that this is a technique I support a lot and I talk about a lot. Getting students to verbalize the key terminology is so important for them to be able to think about that terminology. And for students to think about the terminology, they have to know how to spell the word, how to say the word. And once students do start thinking about the keywords, they start remembering them. And they need to remember them to pass exams. So it's very much a dynamic, interlinked process of language acquisition that's linked to learning. So speak slowly, speak clearly, repeat words, and get students to actually say the words as well. Everybody say whatever word it is, and you get the students to say that word. The second thing is try using vocabulary games with students, particularly games that emphasize good spelling. Hangman is a very good game. Word searches can be good if they're used periodically. Crosswords can be good. There's lots of websites out there where you can create your own crosswords. There's also lots out there ready-made. Also, games like Splat are very, very good. Now, those who followed me a long time will know what Splat is, but a basic description for you all would be where you write the keywords on the whiteboard or on your smart board, and you ask students to come up to the whiteboard. You have one student stood on the left, one stood on the right, and you give a clue, and then you say 1, 2, 3, and the students have to tap or splat the answer, which is written on the whiteboard. A very simple game, very effective game. You have to be careful students don't get too excited with it, but it works really, really well for reinforcing key vocabulary. And also, live quiz apps can be very, very good for ELD and EAL learners, and particularly Quizlet Live, one of my favorites, because it really gets students collaborating, which is good because it means that those shy students don't have to speak up and speak out. They can talk with their friends, and there's comfort in the group dynamic of Quizlet Live. It's competitive, it comes with its own music, and it's flashcard based, so it's very much a vocabulary based edtech tool. So definitely utilize Quizlet Live. It's one of my favorites. And look into games like Blockit as well, you may have heard of. And also, I'm sure you've heard of Kahoot. Kahoot is really good. But I do really like Blockit. It has a greater variety of games than Kahoot currently does. Although Kahoot do seem to be upgrading their system these days, so we might see some interesting things from Kahoot in the future. And Quizzes is very good as well. That's Quizziz, another great game. And the really cool thing about a lot of these live quiz apps is that they can feed into one another. With Blockit, for example, you can literally import a Quizlet flashcard set into Blockit, and it creates the Blockit game for you automatically. It's very, very quick and easy. So what I often do with my adult learners, actually, who I teach business English to, I create a Quizlet Live, and then once I've created the Quizlet game, I import that to Blockit. So they're learning the same vocabulary, using the same clues, but in multiple different ways, and at different stages in the lesson as well. So they might do the Quizlet Live at the beginning of the lesson, and that might be covering vocabulary they did last lesson. Then they might do a Quizzes in the middle of the lesson, and then a Blockit covering the same vocabulary, or maybe merging the vocabulary of the Quizzes and Quizlet at the end of the lesson. So they're using the same vocabulary in multiple different ways and learning new vocabulary in an interactive, fun way. So I recommend that, everybody, because we've got to make learning fun for these EAL and ELD learners. And we have the technology to do that these days with these live quiz apps. And also traditional games like Splat are very, very good as well. Consider trying Bingo with students. Very classic game. You will need to create little bingo cards. But it's great for vocabulary because you can give a clue and the students have to cross out the word that's either spelt by you, or you give a clue for that word, or you might even say, if it's a very basic class with basic English, you might even just say that word, banana, apple, tomato, and the students have to cross out the word on their bingo card. Very fun game, very engaging type of game for students. So try these games. The third thing I would say with helping students who have English as an additional language is to use pauses. Pause to allow students to think about what you've said. Now, you're going to find this is particularly helpful when you ask students questions as well. You'll find that students who really don't understand English very well, or they're just developing their English knowledge, you'll ask them a question and they'll need quite a bit of time actually to think about how to say their answer. Now, they might know the answer in their own language. Maybe their native language is Mandarin or Thai or Russian or something. But they then have to not only think about the answer, but then translate that answer into English in their heads before they verbalize it to you. So allow students time to think about answers before they say them to you or they write those answers down. Very, very important. And also, I'm not completely against allowing students to talk about their answers as well, actually. In many situations, that can be helpful, particularly when you've got someone else in the class who speaks the same native language as that student. If the student is very, very weak at English and they don't even understand the question you've asked, maybe you've repeated the question and they still don't understand, sometimes a good friend who speaks the native language of that student can say your question in their language and it'll become clear and they can think of the answer. So consider doing that. Another thing I would suggest is, in the long term, as you're trying to build up students' knowledge of vocabulary, get your students to build glossaries of key terminology, particularly if you're teaching a technical subject. I teach chemistry, for example, and I teach chemistry mostly to students who have English as an additional language. It's a very challenging subject anyway, even for native English speakers. Now imagine learning chemistry, especially the advanced chemistry, through a different language like German or Mandarin or something, and you know your native language is English. Very, very challenging. So what glossaries do, if they're planned properly and they're checked and they're monitored and you allow students time to create them and you give students source material to help them create them, glossaries can be a great way to get the key vocabulary in one place, to have a meaning written for each word, and to have a translation there for that student. And we should encourage all of our EAL students to create glossaries for their subjects, because so much of the marks that students get in their exams are due to correct execution of key vocabulary and key terminology. So very important we reinforce that so well with our students, and we're checking on that regularly. The final thing I'll say is, don't neglect the importance of spelling. It's come to my attention many times over the past nearly two decades now that many students seem to think that spelling doesn't matter that much in exams, and as long as they've got the basic gist, they'll be okay. And I think a lot of teachers, perhaps from different subject areas, seem to have this idea that spelling is not that important. It's actually really, really important in some subjects, probably in many subjects. In chemistry, for example, there are words which are very similar in spelling, but have very, very different meanings. Very different meanings. Magnesium and manganese, for example, completely different elements, different spellings, but very similar sounds. And although the spellings are different, they're similar. Calcium and calcite, for example, sulfur and sulfide, for example. And I'm sure in your subject area, you can think of very similar sounding words and very similar spelt words, but in the exam, the student has to be very specific. So be really careful with those, with words which are spelt in a similar way or spoken in a similar way. And also, as well, on top of that, words which have very similar meanings. In physics, for example, there's speed and velocity. Now, speed is different to velocity, but it's only ever so slightly different. And in some exams, the student must write velocity and not speed, for example. I'm sure you can think of examples in your subject. I'm trying to be a non-specialist now, but in English, maybe poem and sonnet. Completely different. As far as I remember from my days in high school, a sonnet is a 14-line Shakespearean-style poem, if I remember rightly. And a student may need to use the word sonnet and not poem in their exam. But they're very similar concepts. So identify in your subject area words which are similar, sounding or spelling, and concepts which are similar, and work hard to help your students distinguish between those words, those spellings, and those concepts. Very important we do that. And off the top of my head, that's really all I can think of right now. I'm sure you have your own ideas, and please do share them with me. Through Spotify, you can actually comment on these podcast episodes now. So there'll be a question at the end of this episode that says something like, what did you think of this episode? Please do feel free to write a comment and give your own suggestions, because I want these episodes to be enjoyed and to be useful for the global teaching community. So any ideas you have, please share them so that the other people can benefit from those. And that's it for today. Now, next time, which will be very soon, what am I going to be talking about? I'm going to be talking about the return of the furries, these students, these children who identify as cats and horses and animals. Now, this is a huge story that's just broke, and I still need a bit of time to process all the information. So I wanted to give you a podcast episode today that was useful, and I want to keep the content fresh, but I couldn't do one on the furry thing today because I still need more time to look through everything. There's the whole Joe Rogan angle that I need to kind of gather my thoughts about. There's some recent interviews with Piers Morgan and a panel of people that came out very recently that is very interesting. Lots of information from that. There's the recording from Rye, I think it was called Rye College in the UK, where these two teenage girls had recorded their conversation with the teacher. So there's lots to unpick about this story. So I'm very excited to be working on this little project, and in the next few days I'll have a nice juicy topical podcast episode for you all about dealing with is the best way to describe it, dealing with any children in your classroom who identify as cats, horses, or other animals, and what teachers should do about that and how we should support those students. I'm not sure if that's the right phrase to use, but how we should handle a situation like that. So I'll keep you posted, watch this space, and until next time, take care and bye bye for now.